Welcome, one and all, to the show that speaks about cognitive skills like leadership, communication, teamwork, iterative and adaptive methodologies, emotional intelligence, and coaching. My name is José Mata, and I'm a certified master coach from the Center for Coaching Certification and member of the International Coaching Federation, with over 15 years of experience in the software business. You can reach out to me directly by visiting www.josemota.net. All right, let's get back to the topic of today. Enjoy. This is episode 4 on my ongoing series on understanding procrastination. In the previous episodes, we've talked about how fear, overwhelm, and distractions interfere with our productivity and overall well-being. Check those out if you haven't. There are some ideas there that I'll be picking up as we go through the series. I'll be honest with you today. This particular topic took me the longest to think and write about. What I'm about to share with you today is mostly the result of my self-retrospective over the years that culminated in my recent achievements in order to become a useful partner to my clients, as coach specifically. There's often a misunderstanding on what accountability really is. I still can't 100% put my finger on it, and I'm learning. With that out of the way, let's begin. While some people may thrive on the pressure of a tight deadline, others may struggle with the weight of accountability and therefore procrastinate. Accountability is a double-edged sword that can either motivate or overwhelm us, depending on how well we understand it. Today I'm exploring what accountability really means and how it affects us individually and as groups of people. By definition, accountability is the willingness to accept responsibility for the actions you take. Actually, I would dare to couple those actions with thoughts and words. It is very different from liability, to be contractually obligated to give something up when not meeting expectations. In my journey exploring the concept of accountability, I've realized a vital difference between the two. When you become liable, you risk losing something. When you hold yourself accountable, you risk gaining something. Isn't it remarkable that the moment we look at this very idea through a positive lens, our attitude changes? The first time I told this to myself regarding my aspirations to become a coach, my whole body felt weird, in a good way. I felt engaged and motivated to commit to it, because I responded to what it truly represents. It has nothing to do with consequences, but rather integrity and dependability. Having said this, I'm proposing that there are two sides to one coin on the subject: activities slash tasks and people. In the coaching community, we often play with these two expressions, which are really interesting and apply rather well to understanding accountability. The what and the who. Let's start with the what. For some, accountability is a powerful tool to get things done. Having something to answer to can provide a sense of structure and purpose, helping us to stay focused and committed to our goals. On the other hand, for others, it can be a source of stress and anxiety. The fear of failing or disappointing others can be paralyzing, leading us to avoid tasks or give up altogether. When I'm coaching my clients, I partner with them in exploring their ideas, challenges, and emotions. What's interesting about the process is that we do ask about accountability. How will they hold themselves accountable? The answers are very diverse. Some say, "I'll just do it, that's it." Others decide to check in daily with their supervisor and give them a report. Others will use some sort of app that keeps track of their progress. The answers tend to be somewhat creative and unique to each person. A good way to develop accountability is to start with small undertakings at a time. Explore what those mean to you and others. Break them down in activities or outputs and associate them to their ultimate outcome. Ask yourself, what resources do you have to meet that undertaking? You are now ready to make a decision of what to do, and you feel empowered to get to work and to hold yourself accountable because you're invested. When you're finished, celebrate. Appreciate the work you've done. Learn from that experience. Identify improvements. Rinse and repeat. Sooner or later, you'll be realizing that you're slowly increasing your capacity of accountability. This is a sequence that I'll summarize real quick. Zoom out, explore, break down, connect, evaluate, appreciate. Something to keep in mind somewhere close to you so that you can develop your own sense of accountability. Here's an interesting question. By contrast, what do you think about setting expectations too far ahead in the future? Specifically on complex problems, what is the risk of doing a huge amount of work and have it bounce back, and you'll have to redo the whole thing? If you know me well, you'll see where I'm getting at. Outcomes. I've been building products for 15 years. If there's one lesson I've learned, is that the outputs I've generated did not map one-to-one to the outcomes we looked for. The further we saw into the future, the less predictable our outputs would be. How did this reflect in our accountability? Jonathan Martial, an agile coach I once worked with, shared the principle of the prime directive. The confidence that we've put in the best version of ourselves to achieve the goals we've set. I usually see that translated to energy, intellect, focus, dedication, transparency, and kindness. Let's switch our angle a little bit and think about examples of a lack of sense of accountability. What does that picture look like to you? Give yourself some time to think about it. I'll wait. People sometimes feel unable to commit and to channel their energy and time properly. There are many reasons for that to happen. An acronym named FEARS adequately illustrates five of those. Number one, fear of failure. An obvious one. People won't commit to what they fear not seeing through to the end. Good ways to overcome fear include taking commitments as a learning experience, and also to visualize what is the target of fear. The sooner you explore it and start to experiment with ideas, the less scary it is and the more confident you get. Number two, excessive perfectionism. An interesting posture that leads to stagnation due to our expectations. If conditions are not ideal, we don't commit. If it has outside forces we cannot control, we don't commit. Good ways to battle this sense of readiness will be explored in our upcoming episode. In short, accept what's outside of your control, embrace the concept of iteration, and go from there. Number three, avoidance of discomfort. More specifically, perhaps, the discomfort towards the unknown, which is typical of knowledge teams like science, research, and development. We don't commit to the unknown. Gradually taking small steps towards a far distant outcome expands our ways of thinking without risking too much. As with complex problems, our approach is to probe one aspect at a time, sense it, and then respond. The typical response portrayed for complex environment in the Kanevan framework. If you're interested in the framework, I'll drop a link for your perusal. Number four, resistance to change. A classic. Why commit to something different when today is just fine? Why are we to go through this change and I'm being held accountable for it? I didn't ask for it. Resistance is a given. Humans grasp for control all the time, and many struggle with having to let go some of that control. This is natural to happen, and good for us that we acknowledge that. Instead of resisting change, why not embrace it and further understand your fundamental purpose? Detach yourself and your purpose from the change that you're facing with. Most of the time, we struggle to realize that a particular change has a fundamental reason for existing. And most likely, the change will fulfill an already recognizable outcome. Find out how that's going to work, and you'll notice resistance cut in half. Finally, number 5, scarcity of self-confidence, a frequent possibility. We look at a task, we underestimate ourselves to do it, and we render ourselves unable to commit. Here's the tricky yet interesting part. Most of the times, we impose limits on ourselves because it's the comfortable thing to do. Oh, it's too expensive to get training. Or, I'm not sure I have the skills. Or, I'm too scared to speak in public. I'll break halfway. Self-confidence is a skill that you build up slowly over time and intentionally. And I want to share with you a real story that attests to that. There was a 12-year-old young man who went to church every Sunday. He was very shy, somewhat clumsy yet polite in his manner, and struggled to speak to other people. Each time, 2 to 3 people from the group would get up and teach about a principle in the Bible. One day, he was invited to go up there and speak to that group. Imagine how he must have felt at that time. Despite feeling privileged to speak about the Word of God, he wasn't sure how to do it. He felt very insecure, fearful that he would choke on his words because never in his life he's done such a thing. He only went to school and played with his brothers at home. So the first thing he did was to ask mom and dad if they would help him. They started by going over the topic of the speech, and they outlined a structure of things to explore. Then they would write 1 or 2 paragraphs on those ideas, sustained with verses from the Bible. They would then create a very basic introduction and a summary conclusion. When they were done, he practiced running the speech with his family so that he would be prepared for the real deal that upcoming Sunday. That day, his name was called, shaking nervously. That boy got up there in front of a crowd of 40-something people. He slowly unfolded the paper from his pocket with his handwritten speech. He opened up his Bible with little tags on the side for each citation he'd read, and he went through the whole thing, sometimes stumbling. In the end, he got down and went back to his seat close to mom and dad, brutally relieved that it was over. He felt so proud that day because he overcame his self-imposed limitations and he held himself accountable to God. Fast forward 25 years later, with many speeches, meetings, presentations, a whole life under his belt. Today, he is a husband to a beautiful wife and a father of a wonderful child. He is also a coach, a leader to his teams, and he has his own podcast. That boy was me. As we peel back the layers of understanding around accountability and how it directly influences our ability to overcome procrastination, we see that it's an intricate dance. Each step, from small undertakings to celebrating victories, contributes to our personal growth. As we confront our fears, the acronym FEARS, address them, and step into the arena of change, we find ourselves standing in the world of outcomes, a world where we value progress over perfection, and where we're comfortable with taking calculated risks. The next crucial question is, how can we become more effective and productive? How do we harness this new understanding to make significant strides, not just in our personal lives, but also in our careers? The key is not to avoid stumbling or failing, but rather to learn, to grow, to become a better version of ourselves each day with a true sense of ownership. Now that we've gone over the what of accountability, let's jump to the who. One of the more interesting effects of accountability is the effect it has on people, leadership, direct reports, peers, and ourselves too. Let's explore each different segment, starting with the single most important one, us. Personal accountability is powerful. The best voice we like to listen to is our own. The best name we like to hear is our own. It is therefore more than natural that we tend to our own needs before any others. At least on a general note, there are a lot of exceptions. With that said, when we hold ourselves accountable, we build self-trust, our confidence, and our character too. To give a brief example, when you meet a goal of reaching a certain weight or learning a new skill, our beliefs strengthen and our morale increases. The hormonal response is significant, and it encourages us to keep going, to continue to grow. Our body and mind feel attracted to it in a way that is fulfilling, rewarding, and purposeful. We start incurring on a cyclical chain reaction of commitment, achievement, and celebration, and that feels great. This level of response is amplified and rippling when we incorporate other people into the equation. Who among us isn't proud and excited about winning a team sport? A client succeeding because of the work done together? An outage resolved collectively? A campaign launch yielding significant leads or sales? The common denominator for these successes is accountability to themselves as individuals and as a single collective identity, which fosters dependability, collaboration, trust, and effectiveness. Much like our peers, you and your leadership benefit from accountability in the same tokens. Each one becomes dependable and is allowed vulnerability towards the other, which promotes transparency, collaboration, and ultimately, loyalty. By contrast, when accountability is exploited for unexpected, malicious intent, such as intimidation, probable cause for litigation, or even firing someone, trust immediately erodes, resulting in a toxic, hostile environment. When this happens, people become unhappy. They don't thrive, and they struggle to meet goals and to grow. Throughout my career, I was exposed to different dynamics, and the most successful environments I've worked with were the ones where accountability was used not as a form of liability or intimidation, but rather as an instrument for growth and for trust. How does this understanding of the effect of personal accountability on others promote productivity and effectiveness? In summary, when there's a culture of kindness, growth, learning, and trust, accountability becomes an asset. People become confident, empowered, and trusted in a conducive environment. Teams become true teams with a collective identity and purpose, rather than a mere group of people. Leadership creates tighter bonds with their teams, and it increases trust instead of merely being responsible for managing them. As we approach the end of this episode, which has been one of the longest I've recorded, it's interesting to realize how important accountability plays a role in our growth, because that is the key takeaway. A personal growth mindset is the foundation for true positive accountability. It propagates to the work being done to one's purpose, which ripples wonderfully to teams, leaders, communities, and organizations. Combine your reinvigorated sense of purpose with the techniques we've gone through so far, and we have the ideal conditions for being productive, mindful, and forgiving. Thanks for tuning in today. Stay tuned on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen from. Do you have a question for me to cover? Send it over to podcast@josemalda.net and I'll answer it. Talk to you soon.